Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz interview series with big band leader, DJ, and educator George G. During his stint as a jazz DJ during his college days at Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh, he interviewed the great Count Basie and started a relationship that pushed him into making his own band and pursuing music. Since that time, he's moved on to New York City and has become the new energy and face for swing. His latest 2014 album, Swing Makes You Happy, is getting some solid reviews. It's great on the charts, and it's keeping him busy all the time. Over the course of our interview, we delved into quite a few topics and got to know the man that is geared to make the world swing. Enjoy it, my friends.
Well, first of all, I want to thank you for taking a little time to speak with me. I love your music and
your
fascinating character in jazz today, and I'd love to kind of talk about your story with Count and just your lineage of getting to where you are today. So I appreciate it.
Of course, yes, I'm very flattered. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. So let me start off and ask you, what has been going on lately with you, with gigs and with recording, anything jazz related?
Sure.
What's going on?
So in a nutshell, the release of the new CD, Swing Makes You Happy, is keeping me pretty busy with the promotion. And, you know, I'm very happy to report that we're getting good reviews. And, you know, Downbeat gave us a positive review, and we've been getting good review all around different outlets. And, of course, due to the graciousness of radio programs like yourselves, we're getting excellent airplay. In fact, just this week, I just checked the Jazz Week charts, and we're back up at number 25, which I'm, you know, very proud of course. So between the CD and our regular performance schedule, we have three regular venues in New York City that we do regularly, and it's very interesting because they cover three different spectrums of the big band background. We play every week, and we have been playing every week for the last 18 years at a club in Times Square called Swing 46 Jazz and Supper Club. And that caters to Lindy Hoppers and swing dancers and tourists that come from all around the world to enjoy live big band music and dancing. We're also playing regularly once a month at a very respectable jazz club, Smalls, down in the Greenwich Village. We started a Sunday once a month big band format where we play strictly for listening, which is very exciting. You know, we get to play a little bit. We get to stretch out a little bit, but still swinging, of course.
Yeah.
And then, Joe, the other venue that we just started playing regularly, the newly renovated Rainbow Room up on the 65th floor of the Rockefeller Center, that's a gorgeous ballroom, and we play more of a society swing program there where, you know, we play for dancing and on the famous rotating dance floor. So I'm happy to say that we're possibly the only big band ensemble that has all three of those markets covered at the same time. You know, we can swing it up, jazz it up, and be society at the same time. So I'm very, very happy about that.
Right on. So growing up in New York, you had to have caught some jazz acts, rock acts. What kind of bands did you see growing up that really kind of formed in your head and said, man, this is it, this is what I want to do?
Well, I mean, I did grow up in New York City, and of course I listened to a lot of different types of music, but my first big band jazz connection really didn't happen till I migrated to Pittsburgh, where I went to a university in the late 70s. And I like yourself, I DJed a radio program of big band music in an era where everybody was a punk rocker. And it was a very interesting relationship, but people kind of dug the big band sound at that time. And through an interview that I did for the radio program in Pittsburgh, I got the chance to meet and interview and develop a relationship with the great Count Basie.
Wow.
And Mr. Basie is, if I do say so, sort of supported me, encouraged me, and kind of groomed me. So his spirit and his music is always very endearing to me and my spirit and my soul, for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So you're a double bass guy, correct?
Yes, I am a double bassist by trade, but honestly, I haven't performed for quite a while. Being the front man, the band leader, and you know, I kind of approach the whole band leading approach, sort of like kind of a cross between, obviously, Mr. Bassy, or his very subtle directing of the band. But at the same time, I sort of have that crazed maniac of a Spike Jonze or a Cab Calloway or a Lucky Millinder. You know, I try to kind of keep things exciting and keep things happening between the audience and the musicians and the dance floor, the club. And honestly, Joe, the musicians I work with, there's such a high caliber of being in New York City, and I'm so blessed to have such a great staff of musicians. My music director, David Gibson, he's writing great charts for the band and keeping the personnel very even keel. The bottom line, Joe, is that I don't think I'm good enough to play with my band. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you're a better leader. That's the key, you know?
But yes, I do pride myself. And, you know, I mean, I know the music, of course. I love the music, and I wouldn't be here if it was otherwise. But perhaps I might have a couple business skills that intermix to kind of keep things afloat, you know.
Absolutely. So we're talking right now, decades and decades past the heyday of swing and big band in this country. Why do you think it's such a timeless genre of jazz?
Because swing, you know, Mr. Bassy shared with me about that whole swing spirit. The CD is entitled "Swing Makes You Happy," and when I was thinking about what I should, that this CD is a labor of an accumulation of decades. This is my eighth album, my first Rondette Jazz. But at the same time, I feel like it's my best work so far, because it doesn't just accomplish it musically, but it accomplishes the spirit of the ensemble. This is an ensemble that regularly works together 2, 3 times, 4 times a week in private events, in jazz events, in, you know, swing events, et cetera. And it's a family. It's a 12-piece group with the singers, with Hillary Garner and John Dokes. But at the same time, there's a roster, like any good sports team, there's a deep bench. Mr. Gibson, our music director, has really worked out a really good core family group of people, musicians that are part of the George G. Swing Orchestra family. So at any given time, even if my A team can't make it, the B, C, D team are right up there with the A team. They're just not a part of the A team because I can't have a 35-piece band, you know what I mean? I forgot what the question was.
No, you answered it. You answered the timelessness of big band and swing music.
And you know what, Joe? It's amazing that everybody's swinging. I mean, when I first started doing this, right after my conversation with Mr. Bassy in the early 80s, he encouraged me, but it was kind of a dark era of big band jazz and swing and dancing and, you know, and then I guess like 15, 20 years ago, give or take, out of the blue, people started swinging. I mean, younger generation, the generation that remembered it, all discovered that beat and that rhythm and that culture and that lifestyle and that music, that excitement. And all across the country, and now definitely globally, people are swinging their butts off. And, you know, the fact that I'm kind of like in the mix and, you know, of that Lindy Hop swing big band culture, I do count my blessings every single day. Everything good in my life is because of big band swing. And I guess it goes back to why the CD is titled Swing Makes You Happy, because it's a mantra that perhaps it's a promotional gimmick, but at the same time, it's a true feeling and belief that everyone in my ensemble, and perhaps hopefully everyone that comes to our show or everyone who listens to our music CD-wise, can leave with that little bit of a happiness and then you know, that we shared with them for sure.
It's a testament to your essence, essentially.
I hope so. It's a legacy. Well, you know, and I guess the musicians, you know, my relationship with Mr. Basie and being in New York City, you know, I returned back to New York 25 years ago after my tenure in Pittsburgh for a decade, sharpening my big band chops. But, you know, through Mr. Basie, I've met, you know, like, I've met so many gracious old school musicians. I mean, we just lost Clark Terry a week or two ago, and he's a prime example of a cat that was selfishly sharing his love and and his experience and his joy of music with me and with everybody. And then over the years, being in New York, you know, a decade ago, I recorded an album with Frank Foster. You know, and that was a fabulous experience. And Frank is and will always be a sweetheart, besides being one of the top big band arrangers of all time. Frank West, Al Gray, Benny Powell, you know, and then, you know, beyond the Basie circles, you know, being affiliated with cats that are, you know, Jimmy Heath and Hank Jones and Milt Jackson. It's amazing, you know, like sometimes I guess one of these days, if I write a list of all the cats that I've had experience with, or just relations with, it's an amazing miracle. It's amazing, you know. I mean, like it really helps shape me to what I am and do right now, for sure.
You know, and that's interesting because the beginning of this was with Count Basie. What was it about that interview that you had with them that turned that proverbial light bulb on in your head?
Well, I mean, it wasn't the conversation as much as me watching him very closely, the way he held himself and the way he interacted with the band members and the way the band members watched his, you know, what, like, treated him like the head of the family. You know, like, and like any, like, it wasn't a dysfunctional family. It was a very pure, loving family that watched each other, and the music showed it when they performed. When that first Downbeat went, you can just tell it was family, you know. And yeah, then the way Mr. Basie interacted with the general public that first time I met him, and you know, and all the times I met, you know, afterwards, it was just the way his graciousness is genuine. And I find that with all the old school musicians that I've been blessed to relate with, that graciousness is always genuine. I mean, if they feel that you're not genuine, then they don't return it. But if they feel that you got that genuineness in your soul, in your music, then they will open the floodgates of and share with you. But Mr. Basie, the fact that he initially spent that time with me, I mean, I was just a young 19-year-old kid, you know, a sophomore in college and had a little radio show, and, you know, and I was like all like star, you know, I mean, you know, like I was starstruck. And he really took me under his wing and just gave me the time of day. I mean, yeah. And then he always told me that, being a band leader, that's what you really, really want to do. That there's going to be a time where you want to give it all up and just say, screw it. And if band leading, or big band leading specifically, is what you want to do, then you remember, you reach inside your heart and soul and remember that Mr. Basie, not just anybody, but Count Basie told you to persevere and keep at it. And, you know, I've only had to use that advice once, and because I was able to reach in at that particular moment and remember that Mr. Basie told me to persevere, well, that's why I'm here now, you know, because that fork in the road could have gone either way.
Yeah, absolutely. So when you did establish your band at Carnegie Mellon in Pittsburgh, mm-hmm. What was it like when you got on stage for the first time in front of a crowd and felt that adrenaline? What was going through your head?
You know, it's funny because I guess it was 35 years ago next month, which was our first show, April of 1980. And believe it or not, our first performance, we were, I don't know if you, I'm sure you remember back in the, at that time period, there was a very popular program called The Gong Show.
Yeah.
And, they had a gong show type of program at this festival we did on campus, and we were an entry. And I have to admit and gloat that we knocked it out of the park. I mean, we were swinging, people were digging it, they were dancing, and they were just blown away by my, at that time, amateur swinging big band of college students. And we won hands down. I think we got the big prize was like $21.18. I think that was the first prize, the first place prize. And that I caught the bug, Joe. I mean, geez. I mean, I've never stopped swinging since that moment. I mean, the adrenaline and you know, and the adrenaline is from both sides of the stage. Being the band leader, you're walking that line between the audience and the band. And when that magic happens, I mean, I can imagine being like Basie or Chick Webb at the Savoy Ballroom or Benny Goodman at the Palomar on the West Coast. You know, it's that, man, you know, it's ecstasy, you know, it's live, natural adrenaline running through your veins. I mean, when my band is swinging, and, you know, we do it day in and day out at Swing 46, you know, I mean, and they could be 200 people in the audience in that club or 20 people in the audience. But, man, when we swing for those handful of people or that pack full of people, but we swing for ourselves at the same time. So it's pretty cool.
That's cool. So you come back to New York after your time in Pittsburgh, and you kind of touched on this a little bit. The crowds, were they really receptive to bringing that style of big band music to them? Were they digging it?
You know, it was still very limited 25 years ago. And, you know, it was still very limited. I mean, the audience was more of a generation that remembered it. And it was not, I was somewhat disillusioned that there wasn't a newer crowd coming out like there is now. So, you know, the first few years in New York was a little bit on the rough side. I mean, but literally, I mean, out of the blue one day, people just started swinging their asses off and dressing and drinking martinis. And it became mainstream, you know.
Yeah.
I started getting calls. I mean, the Swing 46 opened up in Times Square 18 years ago, and we were one of the first bands to play there. And people started coming out, dressing vintage and learning the Lindy Hop and, you know, knowing about the big bands and about great dancers like Frankie Manning, who was one of the original Lindy Hoppers in the Savoy Ballroom. He was alive at that time, so he was like an icon of the dance. And, you know, and then, you know, we started touring and doing swing performances around the country, you know, overseas. And to this day, it's still pretty strong. The new CD right now has opened up a market for us because, like, a lot of the music is traditional bass, but it still has a cutting edge to it.
Yeah.
Our music director, David Gibson, has written a lot of original music that gives us an identity. And I think it's beginning to open door to the next steps of the George G. Orchestra, Swing Orchestra history, where, you know, we've played major jazz festivals over the years. We were in Brazil. We did a tour of Brazil like 2 years ago. But I'm very interested in being part of the jazz festival circuit around the world. I mean, I really want to do some swinging for jazz festivals around the world. That is, I think the CD, Swing Makes You Happy, is going to be the calling card for that next level, the next plateau of the George G. Swing Orchestra.
Right on. So speaking of being on the road, I'm going to paint this kind of mural of your life a little bit here. You played for Ozzy's 50th birthday. Then you went to Japan and had a really kind of groundbreaking event there. And then the great Quincy Jones invited you to perform for the Royal Family of Jordan. Tell me, out of all of those murals there, do you have a good story out of any of those that's just like, bam, just kind of a classic jazz story?
Classic jazz story. You know, there's so many. You know, I'm at that age and level of my career that I really need to start writing some of this stuff down. And, you know, I've been kind of playing around with the idea of writing a memoir. Because I, you know, like people, like even when I do an interview such as this one, Joe, it just opens a floodgate of memories. You know what I mean? Like, and it's not documented anywhere, and I have to do that soon. So hopefully, I'm going to use this interview as a catalyst to get my act together and either blog about it. Or I will blog about it and eventually hopefully put it in print or in an organized form.
Yeah.
But stories, Joe, I mean, I guess one of the best stories I have is, you know, I mean, jazz-wise, for me, it's a personal one, is meeting my wife, Mitsumi, when we were playing in Japan for the first time. We were doing a tour in Japan, and the last night we were doing a Lindy Hop dance in Shinjuku at 2 in the morning on a Thursday night. And I was thinking, well, you know, who's going to show up for a swing dance in this little back alley nightclub, in, you know, at 2 in the morning on Thursday? But the promoter said, don't worry, it'll be cool. So, you know, we did these. So after our regular performance, we were actually playing a lingerie trade show. It's a long story, but yes, we were a swing band playing swing music for these American models in lingerie.
That's rough. That's really rough.
So we did the swing dance, and during the first break, first of all, the room was packed. They were drinking, smoking cigarettes, and, you know, and they were partying their butts off at 2 in the morning on a Thursday night.
Nice.
And, you know, after the first break, you know, the dance floor parted, and I saw my future wife at the bar, and went up and met her and talked with her. You know, English was a little bit difficult communicating. But that really, like I say, swing is part of everything good in my life. And, you know, that was, to me, I don't know if that's a jazz moment, more of a personal moment, but it's kind of a combination. But that, it's a very special moment in my life. I mean, perhaps maybe the most important moment in my life, musically and personally, along with the so many other ones, you know what I mean? But that one to me is the most dearest to me. You know, I mean, that's like, you know, that's coupled up with playing celebrity weddings, you know, being on, you know, performing with, top jazz artists, and, you know, using the urinal next to a drunken Ozzy Osbourne in the bathroom of the Beverly Hilton on his 50th birthday. So that surpasses everything. All of those, you know.
Well, a good story is about being alive, and there's nothing more than nothing more about being alive than meet your wife gig. That's pretty cool. That's,
you know,
for sure.
Yes. And on the other, and on the other side of the world at 2 in the morning in a little packed nightclub in a back alley of Tokyo, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. How are you gonna script that? That's the beauty of life. There's no way you can script things like that. It's just life, man.
My high school music teacher, Mr. John Todgers, I went to Stuyvesant High School in New York City. And this is back in a day when public schools actually had music programs, you know. I just reconnected with him. And obviously he's very proud of me. And, like, you know, I take this with a grain of salt, Joe. You know what I mean? Like, you know, but having my music teacher being proud of me, I have a lot of pride in. But he always teases me that this would make a very good movie, a very good inspirational movie. You know what I mean? About doing good in life. You know what I mean? And well, you know, I'm still on chapter 10 or 12 out of a, you know, 20 plus chapter story. So, you know, like I said, maybe I need to write the memoirs down first. You know what I mean?
Well, you have a hell of a beginning. I think about the Keep On Keeping On film with Justin and Clark. You know, you count. You know, you're unassumingly going into an interview, and here you go. You're lighting a match that's going to create an inferno, basically. You know, so, that's a hell of a start right there, I'd say. But let me explore just a little bit of kind of your alter ego, or if it's just a part of your persona. You're a DJ as well, correct?
Well, yes. I started DJing swing dance events specifically because back maybe like 5 years ago, or maybe more, a lot of DJs in the Lindy Hop circuit were on this kick where they wanted to dance to, like, I mean, great music, but not necessarily what I consider true big Lindy Hop dance music. I mean, they were dancing to maybe some funk and some R&B or some jump blues or jazz trios, and great jazz trios too, you know, mind you. You know, we're talking about, you know, but I just didn't feel that people really being exposed to the big band sound, which is the true Lindy Hop music, dance music. And, you know, and I'm not naive enough to think that it's just Basie and Lionel Hampton and the hot swing bands. I mean, we're talking about a whole spectrum of big band dance music that a whole generation and culture was being accustomed to. You know, we're talking about Harry James, Benny Goodman, Tommy Dorsey, Woody Herman, Charlie Barnett. So, and I knew I had that connection. I had that collection of music, you know, in my iTunes library. I had all that. I mean, I have thousands and thousands of tunes. So, and I said to myself, and DJing, I mean, how hard can that be? I mean, you know, like, you know, once you're a big band leader and you're doing, like, performances day in and day out, you know, pressing a couple of buttons on your iPad application, you know, it just seems like second nature. So I've been doing little DJ events here and there for Lindy Hoppers, and you know, I'm getting kind of a good reputation because I know what dancers like, and I'm good at watching the dance floor. When I do a dance with my big band, Joe, I never have a preset list of tunes that I want to play, because that never makes sense to me. How can you know what your dance floor is going to want that afternoon before the show, you know, when you're setting your set list? So for me, my cats know that I very subtly bark out a number and they get it up as soon as possible and start playing it. And that happens literally in the second half or third of the song beforehand. And while I'm picking out those songs, I'm also calculating what's I anticipate it's going to happen two songs down the line. What happened one or two songs beforehand? What's happening at the moment? So I use those same band leading skills to do that DJing. But I kind of have that model all big bands all the time. And, you know, I just kind of like make sure. And it's funny because now the kids are, they're all, big bands are kind of vogue again. You now hear all the DJs playing all those classics again. So yeah, so I basically make sure that I keep, you know, like I said, I never have a set list beforehand that I'm very impulsively deciding what song, what rhythm, what styles on the fly, and keeping an eye on the dance floor and seeing what works, and, you know, calculating all the factors beforehand and afterwards, and kind of, you know, kind of mishmashing it and making magic happen.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of magic, another facet of you has been education, and you've been teaching swing era classes at the New School University, leading clinics. What do you want those that you're teaching to take away from what you're giving them? What do you want them to understand?
You know, I just, that music performance, then, you know, you take it, you don't be in there for the wrong reasons. And whatever those wrong reasons may be, I mean, like, you know, what could it be? I mean, it could be, you know, getting girls, getting rich, or you know, etc. But it is an art that needs, and as an artist, you know, you are preserving a tradition, and that is, you know, applicable to whether you're a tap dancer or you're a painter or you're a sculptor or, you know, et cetera. But being a musician is you are a bona fide artist, and it's you know, you need, you know, you follow, you pay tribute to the ones before you that opened the groundwork for you to be in the place that you're at. But don't ever be afraid to express yourself, because there's never, ever a wrong expression, you know. And I try to, you know, I try to kind of let people know that, because it's very, you know, New York is a tough town.
Yeah.
And, you know, and but at the same time, it's the greatest town for an artist to be at, especially a musical artist in the jazz big band idiom.
Yeah.
The resources and the opportunities are here. So, you know, whenever I speak to, whenever about people about the art, I just make sure that they, you know, they know that it's a joyful experience. And, you know, Joe, when band leading becomes not a happy situation for me, I'll be the first one out the door, you know?
Right.
You know, I mean, it's not, for me, it's not worth it, because I've drank my own Kool-Aid. Swing makes me happy.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm trying to get that out there because it worked for me. And
yeah.
I'm not naive. Like I said, I'm not ignorant enough to think that that's a cure-all. It's just a Kool-Aid drink to keep you happy for a little while. And if you can have that in you for a little while and spread it out a little bit past that, if it can be in you for weeks or the rest of your life, you know, I like to think that maybe the swing made you happy enough for the rest of your life. You know, it did for me, but you know, even if it did for a couple of hours, I'll take it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even if it's just for that moment, I will take that also. But for a lot of these young musicians that I, and I'm always, like the way Basie taught me, and all the other cats that are all those old school musicians that are so, they're so selfishly sharing. I try to do the same. I try to learn from that, you know. And not that I'm, you know, to be on a pedestal, no, far from it. But you know, any musicians or band leaders that are up and coming, they have my full support. You know, whether it's words of encouragement, you know, sharing bandstands or stock charts or whatnot. You know, if you're genuine, I'm genuine. You know, I don't do that lecturing nearly as much as I like to, but
yeah.
Perhaps that's part of my future agenda that I'd like to expand on also, for sure.
Right on. Speaking of happy, what is the greatest thing about jazz?
What is the greatest thing about jazz? Well, that's a pretty broad question. I mean, I always go back to the fact that it's movement, you know, physical or mental. You know, it sort of goes back to that story, that famous story about Basie, when someone asked him about what, you know, a variation of your question, where they ask you, what is swing? And, you know, the interviewer anticipated a very perhaps complex answer. And he said, I mean, pretty much he just said, tap your toes. And then there was a sort of uneasy silence. And then perhaps it hit the interviewer what he meant, and they started tapping their toes. And then the next thing he said, after kind of an uneasy pause, he said, snap your fingers. And then, you know, I guess in that moment, both of them may have been snapping their toes and tapping their toes and snapping their fingers. You know, hopefully on 2 and 4.
Yeah, know? Right. Without a doubt.
And then that's the end of that story, you know.
Yeah.
So perhaps I will borrow that answer and use it at this moment.
Beautiful. That's awesome. So let me ask you this. You met Count. You've met a lot of people in jazz. Is there somebody from that swing era, the big band era, that if you could get into a time machine and go back and meet, you would meet them? And what would you want to talk to them about?
I mean, obviously, you know, I've been lucky enough to, you know, like to have a relationship with Mr. Basie, and, you know, so I won't. And I've had that opportunity to chat with him many a times, you know, so I won't include him in that in this example. But perhaps the one band leader that I would like, I mean, the king of all of the band that played for Lindy Hoppers for swing dancing per se is Chick Webb. And he was the house orchestra of the world famous Savoy Ballroom in Harlem. And that really is the birthplace of hot big band jazz and Lindy Hop. There was a gentleman here that passed away of 5 years ago, Mr. Frankie Manning, and he was a fine gentleman, and he had a big deal with the resurgence of that style of music and dance in the last 30 years or so. He was a very youthful at heart man that traveled around the world, based in New York City, about and preaching big band music and Lindy Hop. And he danced with Chick Webb at the Savoy Ballroom. And Chick Webb had a very exciting band. He understood the importance of the arrangements. In fact, believe it or not, one of Chick Webb's original arrangers, Van Alexander, he scored many of the Ella Fitzgerald charts, like A Tisket, A Tasket. Well,
yeah.
Believe it or not, Van Alexander is going to be 100 years old in May, on May 2nd. He lives in Santa Monica, California.
Wow.
And I'm proud to say that he's a young 99 and 11-month-old gentleman. He's like, and he's very supportive of my music. He came to one of my shows in California last July 4th, and he was blown away, and he loves Dave Gibson's arrangements, and this is, you know, and he tells me some stories about Chick Webb, and you know, for a gentleman that, I mean, he's going to be 100 in a few weeks, you know,
yeah.
And he was there at the Savoy Ballroom, this kind of gangly Caucasian guy that you would never think would be at the Savoy Ballroom in 1938, you know what I mean, but he was digging Chick Webb. And he wiggled his way into writing charts for that band, and he told me that it was magical. You know what I mean? Like the dance floor with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dancers, day in and day out, in the heart of Harlem and in the Harlem Renaissance, and you know, and an integrated ballroom where there were, Joe, and I'd like to explain this to your audience that not only am I a working professional swing big band leader, but I like to pride myself. I'm also the only working professional Asian-American big band leader out there. You know what I mean? And,
yes.
You know, he told me at the Savoy, there were people of all walks of life, black, white, Chinese, you know. They were all, like, swinging together with no, you know, it didn't matter if you were green, purple, or orange. You know what I mean? It all mattered about the music and the dance and the social aspect of it, and the rhythm, you know. Imagine that, Joe, you know.
Yeah.
Imagine that even today. I mean, yes, there are places like that more today, and I've been blessed to be part of it, you know. But day in and day out, you know, and then Chick Webb's band, you know, him banging them drums and, you know, and the catch is blowing, you know. I mean, I would want to be there.
Yeah.
You know, I would want to be there. And, you know, mind you, over the years, I've developed a couple of Lindy Hop steps myself, so I would want to be there listening and dancing.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, speaking of crowds and throngs of happy people, what's one of the nicest things that a fan has ever said to you?
Not to overuse that word happy, but I'm gonna let me just use it one more time.
Okay.
You guys look happy.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, I've seen many bands out there myself. They may not look that happy.
Yeah.
I mean, for whatever reason, I don't know. You know what I mean? But people come up to me. I mean, you know, yes, they say the band is swinging. You guys sound great, you know. But the best compliment they can give me is you guys look happy.
Yeah.
And that, you know what? They say that not just at swing gigs and jazz clubs, but they say that at weddings and corporate events. You know, like, I'll play a wedding, and then the bride and groom or the father of the bride will come up to me, man, you guys look happy. You know, and when you got a bunch of cats up there, the 10, 12, 17 cats on the stage, man, if you look happy and really, really look happy, I mean, you know, and you can't fake happiness, really.
Yeah.
You can't, like, who would have said, I think it was Guy Lombardo or Lawrence Welk, and that kind of explains it all, but that's another story. But he kind of said to his band members, I don't care if you're happy or not, just look it.
Yeah.
But I'm happy to say that perhaps I create an environment, a canvas where that, because, you know, how can you make happy music if you're not happy yourself?
Right.
It would be hypocritical.
Yeah.
So, you
sure.
know. You know, we create that environment, or I create that. You know, perhaps I will take credit for that as a band leader. I try my best to create an environment where the cats can really excel at their art because they're artists and they're happy, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's just swing. I mean, you know, there's no sense for me to be a taskmaster. I mean, everyone in my band dresses impeccably. They all arrive on time and they all play to the top of their ability at any given moment.
Yeah.
What more can I ask? You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Absolutely.
So yes, you guys look happy.
Right on. So this is my final question for you, and I know that you're going to be working on an award-winning memoir and possibly a movie as well. I want to know what is next for you, whether it's tomorrow, a year from now, we get together in 10 years and we talk. What do you want to be next and to talk about?
Joe, I think I might have touched upon this before. And, you know, I mean, I still obviously will always have my roots of playing for swing dancing. And, which I will continue to do so. Whenever the opportunity arises. Obviously, performing private events is my bread and butter, pays the bills, and which I will continue to do so, of course. But I want to, I've been blessed that I've been traveling, you know, I've been to parts of Europe and the Far East, but and across the country, you know, to South America. But I want to travel much more around the world, spreading the gospel of swing. I don't want to do it as a, you know, I mean, I don't want to do it as a tourist or, you know, I want to do it as a band leader of the George G. Swing Orchestra. I want to go to Malaysia, India, Wyoming, or Canada, you know, Argentina, or Sweden, and spread the gospel of swing. Whether it's a swing dance or jazz festival, which is sort of our next mark, our next goal, but I want to travel the world and see the world through my music. That is my goal. Of course, you know, the memoirs and the movie and all that stuff is all part of it. But I want to travel the world. You know, I don't want to be away from my family too much, and hopefully they can travel with me at times. But I want to be able to go and see. see places that, you know, I have yet to see yet, and I want to do it with my music.
I have no doubt that you are, for sure.
I want to go to China, by the way. The final note, there's no reason in the world that I shouldn't be swinging in Shanghai. So
yeah.
Let that be known.
Yeah, absolutely. Amen. Amen. That's great. George, thank you very much for taking a little time out. It was fascinating to talk with you, and I have no doubt that you're going to continue the swing and keep it going and get the world moving in the right direction, man.
Oh, Joe, thank you so kindly. I'm very flattered by your attention.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to yet another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players in New York City, Kansas City, and spots all over America, giving fans all that jazz. And thanks to George G for his swing and energy. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Dimino on the iTunes Store, or you can always visit theneonjazz.blogspot.com for all things Neon Jazz. Until next time, enjoy the music, my friends.
Neon Jazz.